The following is the Francis Ha press conference recorded on Thursday, September 20th, 2012, at the Walter Reed Theater, part of Lincoln Center in New York City. The press conference included director of the film, Noah Baumbach, and the lead of the film, Greta Gerwig, along with Mickey Sumner. Once again, this is the Francis Ha press conference. Enjoy.
Please welcome Mickey Sumner. Greta Gerwig. And Noah Baumbach. Welcome all. Let me start, Noah, with a question to you.
Yeah.
After your last few films where one can maybe sense productions growing bigger in a way, this seemed like a step to the side to perhaps another form of production. Talk about that decision and also what it was like.
Well, it was less about budget and more about finding a way to approach shooting in a new way. I just felt like I wanted to sort of, it's true, there was a version of me making this movie maybe as my first movie, but when I made my first movie, there wasn't technology the way there is now, but I also felt like, you know, if I was going to do something a little bit differently and not with a studio or I wanted to kind of reinvent how I made movies a little bit, and so that's in some ways it was less about budget and more about a philosophy of shooting, I guess.
And what would you say that was?
Well, it's I was comparing it to like a record like Paul McCartney made after the Beatles. Like he made these records in his basement, and they were really big sounding, but they were very intimate, sometimes done with his wife, and there is a tradition of pop records that are made that way. And I felt like, what's the movie version of that? What's something where, like, with a small group of people, we could kind of make something, you know, in some ways homemade, but in another way that was like a great pop album.
Greta, can you talk a little bit about the screenplay, how it developed, and how it started, especially what was the inspiration?
We started trading some ideas back and forth because I think after Greenberg, I definitely felt like I would want to work with Noah again, and he luckily felt the same way. And we started trading ideas, and out of those ideas, a character kind of emerged, and it was a character of Francis. And the writing process was done sometimes together, a lot of times apart, where we'd be just sending each other scenes back and forth, and then Noah would edit what I wrote or vice versa. And but like all things, it's hard to know where they really began and also when exactly they coalesced into something that felt like it was worth making. But then once it had, these people just seemed so real and formed, and then we had such great actors like Mickey and Mike Zeegan and Grace Gummer and Adam Driver, and it's a real snapshot of great actors in New York right now, which is really fun. And it was a joy to have them read the things that we'd written.
And Mickey, could you talk about your work in it? The film is in a way episodic with many different things and different stories going on. Did you relate to the whole story, or were you sort of focused just on your parts?
Well, I didn't read a script, so I was really just focused on my part.
She had no choice.
I didn't know what was going on until really I saw the whole thing in Telluride.
We gave other actors just the scenes they were in. We didn't, I mean, there was a whole script the whole time, but so.
And that was a deliberate strategy for?
It became deliberate. I think there was something interesting to, and maybe Mickey can speak to this from her actual experience of it, but at least I felt there might be something interesting to having actors only play what was in front of them and only play the moment that they were in, and not in some ways think they needed to tell the overall story. And so that was the experiment in that way. But Mickey could speak more to how it felt for her.
Yeah, I mean, we shot chronologically pretty much, so I didn't need to know what was going to happen. I think it was really...
Had you worked like that before?
No. It was refreshing and liberating not to have to freak out about what you're going to shoot next week and just really focus on the day.
Yeah, I mean, I think, I mean, in my experience, it's good. I mean, as good as an actor is, I think, how can they not think where this scene falls in a movie, you know, particularly if it's toward the end or if it's a turning point. And sometimes I think it's hard over a course of a long shoot for an actor and for me to kind of, you forget where this really falls in the narrative of the movie, or you know too well where it falls, I should say, in terms of the narrative. So you, everyone starts swinging for the fences suddenly, and it's not really, maybe that's what you want the audience to feel, but you don't want the characters to feel that. So with this also, because we did shoot chronologically, it was a kind of new way to try to do it.
One last from me. Could you talk a little bit about the editing? I was really admired the editing in the film and felt it had a wonderful quality of always putting me a little off balance, never knowing exactly where I was and reorienting myself. And just talk about that, if you would.
Yeah, well, it has, well, one, the structure of the script, which was something I think I realized more consciously once I started directing it, and less so while we were writing it, is that it has a lot of little scenes in a row. They'll often have, like, Frances buying, you know, supermarket, waiting for Sophie outside her work. They eat lunch in the park. There's like, and there, it's almost this sort of, each moment is kind of a punch. It sort of just sort of hits, comes, and then suddenly you hit a scene, like then they're on the subway, and it's a long scene, and it plays out in real time, and or seemingly real time, and that goes throughout the whole movie. And I think it also, sort of the way the movie is structured by her locations and that she keeps going to different places. So I think I came at it with that in mind, and I think I approached in some cases specific shots or scenes that way too. I mean, I think it's a continuation of things that I started doing on Squid and the Whale and Margot and Greenberg, where to different degrees, and it's different in every movie, but a notion of coming in the middle of a scene, or a, you know, or when you do that, and when a scene needs to start, say 20 seconds into it or something, why you arrive in a scene when you do, I think it's something, you know, it's interesting. It's what editing, you know, a big part of editing, but I think the rhythms are kind of just inside me, and it's kind of how I feel. Generally, when you're cutting, and Jen Lame, who cut the movie with me, we both had the same kind of experience of it, is that you just kind of feel like you know when you want to be in something and when you want to be out of something, and sometimes it means cutting someone off in the middle of the sentence, or letting the sentence go into the next shot or something like that. But, you know, it is, I guess, more of a kind of feeling than anything else.
Okay, let's get some questions from all of you. Yes, ma'am, there. Wait for the microphone. It's going to be coming to you right there.
Thanks.
Question about black and white, and also I think I'm not sure the mic was working. It seemed a little bit low.
Again, the black and white was kind of a feeling. It just felt like it should be. I mean, then you start intellectualizing things, and then you have reasons for everything. But it just it was also just something I wanted to do, which was shoot in black and white and shoot New York in black and white. And I also like the music goes with the same feeling of that there's something so clearly cinematic about black and white. And I wanted to shoot very formally in a lot of cases, and there's no handheld camera or anything, you know, to really give Frances her movie. And that the movie that Frances was in was very much a movie, and the music was grand and romantic, and the look was beautiful and black and white and cinematic. So I think that's all true. But it was a kind of just an inclination, I guess, in the beginning. And it's very difficult to shoot anything commercially on black and white film anymore, because the labs don't do it. It's probably almost anything. I think maybe the Taviani Brothers movie maybe was shot on black and white film. Someone told me that. I don't know. That's in the festival. But I'd be curious how they did it. But we shot digitally, and then, but I never saw the color. I always had a black and white monitor, and I edited it in black and white.
We could hold off on flashes. Maybe at the end you can take some more pictures, but it's a little bit annoying to sit up here and get all those. Can we get a mic over here, please? Yeah, here she comes with the mic. So if you hold on.
For Greta, your acting is quite unique and always has been. Can you say something about how you came to your way of acting, and particular in this picture? Everybody else didn't know anything about the other scenes. You knew more than everything about all the scenes. So you talk about the acting generally and in this picture.
I've never particularly meant to have a different way of acting from anybody else. I guess in some ways, I don't mean to sound like Johnny Cash, but that line, like, I play guitar like this because I don't know any other way. And I think a little bit, I don't know other ways to act except for, it's, you always sound silly when you talk about acting, because it's, you kind of descend into things that sound mystical, but it's always from the inside and coupled with, I always have to know why I'm saying things. The words mean a lot to me, and I think for this project, because I worked on the script. It's funny that working on a script doesn't make acting in anything easier. In some ways, it makes it harder because you know what it's supposed to be at all moments, and sometimes as an actor, you can't get there even if you know what it is. And it was, I don't know. It's hard. Noah?
I think you've answered it well.
Okay. Always trying to be normal.
You could have stopped at Johnny Cash.
Okay. Mickey, can you talk about the language? Because it is very precise. Was it a challenge for you to sort of take it in and make it your own?
No.
Yeah.
It's so well written. Everything, I think it's the first thing I've ever been in that I didn't think about how to say anything or how to make it work, because it just is there. It works, and you just have to say it, and you just have to connect, and that's really it. It was such a pleasure to say the words.
Great. Okay, let's see, back there. Yes, we have someone right there in the middle, if we could get to that person. Hang on, wait for the mic.
Hi, it was a lovely experience watching it. For Greta, and then perhaps a little bit later, Noah. Speaking about the character of Frances, could you address the meaning of craft versus being a star? Because it seems that that's what Frances had a great struggle with.
Sorry, the meaning of craft versus being a star? In the story of Frances, the narrative of her wanting to be a dancer, wanting to be in this company, and then where she comes to at the end with the
making her own choreography, but in a small way and holding down a day job. I think that's something, emotionally, that's something that I very much relate to. And it's not... when you dream your fantasy life, I think it's rare for people who have a performative instinct that they dream that they will have to hustle for it and create it themselves. There's a dream that someone will just hand you great scripts or they'll make you a star of New York City Ballet. And that's a fantasy version. But ultimately, I think that it's much more satisfying to have authorship and to care for your own artistic soul yourself and not have someone bring it to you. And I think that she goes through that transformation, and that's what that part of the story is for me. And that's it.
Yes, ma'am. Here, we can get the mic over.
The physicality of Frances is very much determined by her shoes. Throughout a large part of the movie. Can you talk about the clogs, please?
The clogs and the bomber jacket were both things that were written in the script and that I felt really early on that they were masculine in a way and funny, and the way Noah shot the movie formally and a lot of the time far away allowed those to be maximized as physical limitations in some ways. But I mean, part of it was just the clogs. I know clogs are great shoes for waitresses and nurses and dancers and people who are on the go and walking all the time. And my mom always hated them. So that was part of it. My mom hates backpacks, clogs, and leather jackets. So I made a character just for her.
Yes, here in the front. Let's get the mic again.
Greta and Noah, in both Greenberg and this film, the landscape and moving along the landscape is very important, but done in two very different ways. And also in color, black and white, you know, and so on and so on. Can you talk about the difference, as they say, compare and contrast those two experiences?
Well, Greenberg was very much about, I wanted to make an LA movie and to, not in a literal way, but in embedded in that story, and the story of Ben's character and Greta's character was some partially inarticulated and some articulated feelings I had about Los Angeles, and both great love for it and also a kind of a way that I felt not at home and alienated. And I, with Frances, I hadn't shot in New York in a little while, and I grew up here and I live here, and I wanted it to feel, again, in this story, to sort of bring how I feel about New York and into it. And I think a lot of the spirit of the movie in ways that have maybe don't even literally have anything to do with location is how I feel about the city. And, you know, I haven't run through Chinatown holding my friend's hand, laughing or peed in a subway tracks, but I you know, maybe on some level I know that feeling, and I feel that way sometimes in the city and in other ways. It just, maybe it's more just me sitting in a chair. So I wanted to kind of come back to New York and shoot New York in a way that I connected with, and the story just allowed for that, and also the fact that it's about location too, and about it, location and dislocation, and about moving places and how it's moving forward, but also moving in place. And you know, I think all that is true about, you know, my experiences in New York City.
Okay, it's right here. Microphone. Sorry. Hang on just for a sec. Just wait for the mic.
Hi, I love the movie, and I wanted to ask you about the influence of Truffaut, François Truffaut, on your filmmaking and your references to him specifically in this film. We have the Small Change poster and the reference to Jean-Pierre Léaud, and then, of course, the quotations of music by Delarue and Duhamel. And I also wanted to say that I love your last three films, but it was nice to see, like, a return to a kind of lightness. I remember you quoting Truffaut and Mr. Jealousy as well, and it was nice. I should let you answer.
No, I'm happy to hear you talk about it. Well, you got all the references, so I don't. Yeah, and I didn't. In some way, like, even like the Small Change poster was not even by choice. It was ultimately, but clearing posters can be a real drag, and I believe it's Film Desk, Jake Perlin's company, and he just let us use his posters. New Yorker Films has always been really, when they had, they always let us use their posters, and I remember when I saw, actually, Damsels in Distress, there were all these, like, Criterion posters. I was like, you know, because those are the cool people that use their posters, and then you try to get, like, you know, Baby's Day Out from a studio, and they won't let you use it. Is that a movie even? I don't know.
But it's the title of your next
film.
Yeah,
exactly. Spoiler. But the Truffaut stuff is, I love those movies, and I love the energy of those movies, and they're really kind of my favorite kind of movies, and I you know, flattered you say that, I in terms of, like, the actual approach to this script and the filmmaking, I wasn't thinking Truffaut specifically, but I feel like I'm always thinking about Truffaut in some way, and I think maybe in this one that spirit is kind of a clearer shot. I do feel about this movie that it's, of all my movies, and this is this isn't necessarily even better, but I do feel in this movie that whatever kind of abstraction I had in my head, that the movie is the closest to getting that out of here and on to there, that there's always something totally different and things that change, and you look at the movie and you're like, well, I guess that's what I made. And with this one, I really feel like that I kind of set out to make that movie.
In the back there, yes, gentleman here in the middle.
As I have two grown daughters, one of whom lives in Brooklyn, this film resonates strongly as a kind of a real life portrait of what Brooklyn life is like today for 20-somethings. And in watching it, I was also reminded of how well in its time Woody Allen captured the feel and flow of Manhattan in his film Manhattan. And this appears to be a kind of a 2012 version of life in Williamsburg today, is it?
If you felt so, then I think it is. but thank you. I mean, it's also a reference that you know, I accept gladly. I mean, I couldn't shoot a movie in black and white in New York and not think about Manhattan and Broadway Danny Rose and the movies that Woody Allen made with Gordon Willis and like those Truffaut movies, I feel like those are just inside me. I don't even look at them anymore to think about. The influence is so just part of, like, as it is for a lot of people, but it's just part of my insides at this point. I think we wanted to be kind of true to Francis's experience and in these locations. And so I think the fact that it resonates beyond that is obviously what the ideal.
I want to ask you that too, Noah. I mean, when you made Kicking and Screaming, among the things that for me were so wonderful about it was it felt so much a report about a generation from the generation. But a couple of years separate you from these people who are in the film, and now you're sort of looking back or over to people who are considerably younger than you in many ways. What was that like? And was there an experience where you were grappling to figure out their feelings?
Yeah, and I'd also like to say while we're on stage that I thank you for saving Kicking and Screaming, I think, from straight to the USA Network at the time or something, because when it was accepted in the New York Film Festival, it really changed the distributor's feelings about it, and it was a huge thing for me in my career. I mean, it started everything for me. And I think that speaks a lot to the collaboration with Greta and me. I think that it had what, in Greta, it had what I brought to Kicking and Screaming. When I had to watch Kicking and Screaming again for the Criterion DVD, it was difficult to look at it in some ways because I felt I couldn't help but think of all the things I would do differently. But I also I felt really great about the fact that I couldn't do now what the things that really I think are the best things about that movie. There's a spirit and there's a reporting from the inside that could only be true of somebody who was 24 when they made that. And so in a way with this one, I think I could kind of come at it both from the inside and the outside, and Greta is able to do that too. I think it would be reductive to say, oh, Greta is just the person who's going through it and I was removed. I think we both could do both at all times. But I do think it speaks to our collaboration that it's both very present. I think there's the movie feels very of right now and of that time and very true to that time in these characters' lives, but I think it's also very directed. I really do like that about what we did.
Okay, we have time for a couple more right here. This gentleman is sitting here. We could get over to him. Thank you.
Thank you. I quite enjoyed the film. Excellent work from all of y'all, and I'm so sorry that this is another reference question, but Modern Love.
Yes.
Is that meant to remind us of Denis Levant in Bad Blood in the Leo Carrà film?
Yeah. I mean, if it does, great. I just ripped it off. No, I mean, when we shot it, I had this idea, wouldn't it be great? We had this idea, I don't know who had the idea, actually, I shouldn't even say, but of her running through the street. And I didn't plan necessarily on using Modern Love, but in the back of my head, I thought that there's no better, I mean, it's just a great movie moment when he runs to Modern Love in that movie. And this is the Leos Carax movie, and I love it, and I love that movie. And so then in the cutting, I put Modern Love in because I thought, well, this will do until I figure out what music I'm going to use. And then I just thought, well, maybe could I get away with it if I just use Modern Love again? And there really is no better song to run to than Modern Love. And I felt like Modern Love felt like the movie to me, too. And I felt like the context was different enough also that, you know, I hopefully that, you know, he wouldn't be offended, and so there it is.
You talk about your choice of music. Is it instinctual? Do you shoot already thinking about music? Does it come later during the editing?
Sometimes I have very specific ideas about it, but a lot of times I don't. I mean, I there's always music that I keep trying to use in movies, and maybe it speaks to something. Sometimes you make the movie and then you bring the music in that you had maybe in your head when you were writing it or beforehand, and you realize, I didn't make that movie, and so this music doesn't work now. Somehow I made a different movie. And I think with this one, I knew we wanted something big and grand. I didn't know that I'd necessarily be using all this existing movie music, but it all felt right to it. And somehow this movie could hold the references in a way, I think, that because I don't, I think I've made other movies where maybe if I'd brought those things in, I think it would have felt like too, like a wink or something. I think there's something about this movie that it could hold these things and incorporate them and not feel like, oh, that's the song if you know the other movie or something like that, except in a press conference when you get asked. But a lot of the songs also were things that we were kind of liking or listening to. There's a Paul McCartney song that was like it was when they reissued McCartney 2, it was an instrumental that wasn't on the original record, and we really loved it, and so we put it in the movie. And that's sort of a thing of the moment, I guess. I think with this one anyway, it was all, the movie kind of dictated what it wanted, I guess.
Okay, time for one more. Yes, lady right here in the middle. Which, hold on just for the mic.
Hi. Oh, thank you. It's a beautiful movie about female friendship. And while I was watching it, I was wondering, how come we have so many bromance movies going on right now, and we can hardly find a movie about a friendship between two women who, as far as I understand, are not lesbians? So,
well, I don't know why, but I know that they are rare and underrepresented. And I mean, if you want to get technical about it, I think women doing anything other than falling in love is underrepresented across the board. It was funny because in some ways I think, like with so many things, that when we were writing it, the love story between Francis and Sophie emerged from what we were doing rather than being imposed. It wasn't, in some ways it wasn't an intellectual idea of, yes, we should be making a movie about this. It really came out of the characters, and it just became clear that that was the most important relationship in her life, and let's tell this story this way. I remember there was just a day where it was like, this is the story. And I'm so happy we got to make one, because I love them. Whenever I see female friendships represented accurately, or even sort of accurately, I'm so pleased. And I'm very touched that other women seem to feel that way too, because I like girls.
Okay, well, I'm afraid that's all we have time for. Noah, Greta, Mickey, thank you so much
for
being here and for the film.
Thank you.
And thank you very much as well.